We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. All right, guys, welcome to episode 402 of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. I am still without my co-host, Andrew, who is in New Zealand gallivanting around with his new beautiful bride, so he should be back next week in his place. We're only going to do a little bit of time going over some headlines and things because I have Ben Badler on the back end of this with Baseball America breaking down all of the Yankees prospects, the top 10. We talk a little bit about the 100 and MLB, but that's a fun interview that I had with him talking about all those guys. But today joining me is Mr. Nick Kirby, who you've heard on the show before. He was my partner with our GM plan, which we kind of totally tanked on. But welcome back, Nick.
Thanks for having me. And I'm glad we were wrong there, because I definitely wanted Gerrit Cole the whole time. So I've never been more happy to be wrong.
No, it's true. We definitely took a different approach in the sense that we made the approach that the Yankees were going to go under. They didn't go under. So everything was out the window at that point, which is great for all of us, I think. But
smiles all around.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Welcome back. Glad to have you on the show. And we're going to go through some of the things. The first thing we got to really just sad news today. We're recording on Sunday. I'm sure by now you've all heard that the helicopter went down with Kobe, and Kobe has passed away, age 41. His daughter was in the helicopter, and then another gentleman with their kid, I believe, also passed in the helicopter. Just super sad news, obviously, for the families and, you know, for everybody who's sports fans. Just really just an unfortunate day, but it would be remiss of us not to mention that it was there and happened. So what were your first thoughts when you saw that Kobe had passed?
Yeah, I almost didn't believe it. And growing up, I was born in 92. So the guys that were always kind of in the championship or winning championships every year, it was Brady, Jeter, and Kobe. So just to see one of those guys, you know, my generation's guys, just go down like that. I mean, I was never a huge basketball guy, but I mean, he touched everybody in our generation. So it was tough.
Yeah. And then seeing the families and his little girl was in that too. It's just, man, it puts things in perspective. Like when I first saw it, the first thing I thought was that, and I'll get a little deep here, but you know, I saw that a guy like Kobe Bryant, 41 years old, is in a helicopter going to a basketball camp, and this thing goes down. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are, what your celebrity is, what your status is, what you've done in the past, who's around. It doesn't matter. Like, life is a precious thing. You got to take nothing for granted because you don't know when your last day will be there. And it's just puts things in perspective for me, you know, having Kemp as a kid, a little baby who had a heart condition. Still has a heart condition. There's just so many things that go into it. Like, he's born with a circumstance that will, you know, potentially put, some limitations on him. But then you see a guy like, you know, Kobe, who is cut short at 41. It's like crazy, 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 and puts a lot of things into perspective as a father and just a person. So thoughts and prayers, I guess, you know, all that stuff go out to the families. And it's one of those weird, sad days, man.
Absolutely, 100%.
Talking about baseball and some other things and some more positive news, we kind of have an announcement. You're here to talk with me about some Yankees baseball. We're going to touch on Jeter and some more stuff, but we have a pretty big announcement, actually. You are going to be the brand new co-host of George's Box with JJ. So congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Couldn't be more excited. Obviously went over there a couple of weeks ago and did the show. Had a great time. And then he actually told me, we were at the bar together like a week later, and he told me in person. So it's pretty cool. I'm pumped.
Yeah, man. We behind the scenes when we've been talking about this, is you were a name that was super high up. I know you've done radio in the past, and you and I have been on the show together. You've done a bunch of other like podcast hits when we had people come and I couldn't do them. You know, I'm expecting awesome things. Like, I know you guys have a good rapport. You live very close together, so you'll be able to do some things in person too. I'm really looking forward to it. I think you guys are going to have a really good season, and it's going to be just fun listening to you guys talk Yankees baseball and then whatever the hell else you talk about, because that's kind of what George's Box is. It is Pandora's box, essentially, when you have JJ on the mic.
As he says, it's a loosey goose time. That's exactly what it's going
to
be.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think if you guys haven't subscribed to George's Box, definitely go over there and check them out. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to your shows, and give them a subscribe. And you'll start, I think, Nick, you're starting, I'm going to be on as a guest on February 4th, I believe, or whatever the next day of that that will be released, but you'll be on the week after that and then forward through the season. So definitely hit that subscribe button to these guys.
Absolutely. Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. There you go. All right. So what do we have going on this week? Because we have nothing happening. Baseball is done. The Astros have cheated. We know that it's done. We've beaten that with like a dead horse. There's some things to talk about that a little bit, and we'll touch on them, even though I don't want to. We will. We will talk about them. I'm sick of them being in my mouth, to tell you the truth. I'm sick of giving them time. I'm just sick of all of it. But the number one big thing, obviously, on Tuesday, Derek Jeter was inducted into, well, not inducted, but announced that he's going to be part of the 2020 Hall of Fame class, our guy. So, yeah, what were you thinking? I mean, obviously, we all knew that he was going to be in. I think some people were expecting a unanimous vote after Mo got it last year. Like, did that break the ice? And now we're going to see that more often. It should have been one guy ruined the parade. One guy ruined the party. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Thrilled, obviously. I mean, Derek was my favorite player growing up, and I'm sure pretty much every Yankee fan my age or around my age would kind of say the same thing in regards to Derek. But I mean, he definitely deserved it. Sixth all-time in hits. We know what he did with winning five championships, being that stalwart at shortstop for 20 years for us. I don't think it could have happened to a better guy. Obviously, a little bit disappointed with the one guy that didn't vote for him. But as soon as I took a step back, I was like, let's make this about Derek. Let's not make it about the one scumbag who didn't vote for him, and let's enjoy it, because 99.7, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, and, you know, Andrew and I have had this discussion, and it goes down a very weird wormhole, too, when you start talking about Hall of Fame voting and, like, all the things that are wrong with the system itself. But when you look at some guys that – and he obviously didn't know he was going to be the only one. You know, for that being said, like, there could have been three or four other ones. But some guys have a ballot where they vote for a guy that's on, like, maybe the last time that they could be on the ballot, just to try to keep them on the ballot and give them another campaign year, knowing damn well that some of these other guys are 100% going in, like Jeter. So the system's flawed, because, like, when you look at that logic, like, I kind of understand that side of it, and it just shows how bad the system is. Or you just have
totally broken system.
Or it could be just some very bitter Boston writer that was, you know, that's never going to come out.
See, I think it was some bitter, unhappy guy that wanted to make a name for himself. Now, the thing is, I don't think that voter has been revealed yet. I think he remained anonymous, but the point still remains that people are talking about him. I'm sure he tells people, and people kind of know who he is in the inner circles of baseball. You know, he's got his little moment or whatever the case may be. But I think these writers just overthink it with guys getting left off the ballot, like you said. And I know other people are going to vote for Derek, so he doesn't need my vote, or whatever the logic is. If the guy's a Hall of Famer, you vote for him. And I just think they overthink these things.
Yeah, well, and the system doesn't help them. You know, it definitely gives them a little bit of a crutch to do some weird stuff with it. But yeah. Anyway, like you said, not going to make it about that, because it's not about that. It's all about Derek Jeter being the captain, being the guy that led the Yankees to five championships, being the, like you said, the stalwart at shortstop. I mean, he was my favorite guy growing up. I never claim a favorite Yankee per se, but I mean, he was up there, obviously. He's just everything you kind of want that guy to be. You know, I think we get a lot of vibes from Judge in the sense of what he does. He talks like him. They have the same on-camera demeanor. He needs the winning. That's what he needs. He needs championships to even come close to that level. But yeah, Jeter was the guy. So things that have come out this week, he's been on camera and talking a lot. It's a little weird that he's the Marlins.
Still weird. It's been weird since it happened. Like, that kind of freaks me out still, like, seeing him with another organization. And this was the first time that this is the first time since he kind of retired that he mentioned that the Yankees fans are the greatest fans in the world. He hadn't said that in a couple of years. So I was like, it's refreshing to hear from the captain.
He cannot say that the Marlins fans are the best fans in the world. I mean, like, you just can't say that.
That's a lie. Yeah, he can't say that with a straight face.
No, it's pretty funny. And even like the reaction behind the scenes, like that was a good little video, but it was almost like a candid moment. The camera wasn't like in their face. It was the Players Tribune did it in a way that was like, you know, was it black and white, I think, but it was like kind of hidden, like off to the side of a very small group of people doing it. Just very Derek Jeter, I thought.
Very Jeter-esque. And obviously it was the Players Tribune, right, that put the whole thing on, that the company that he owns. And let me say something. Jeter's parents have not aged a day in the 20 years that I've been watching him on TV. Like, if you pull up a clip of them in the stands, 98 or something, they look exactly the same. That was the other thing I noticed. Like, these guys haven't aged at all. He's got some good genetics going, clearly.
Yeah, no doubt. Larry Walker, the other guy that got voted in, will be part of the induction ceremony in July up in Cooperstown. So that will be a fun weekend. I know a lot of Yankees fans are planning to go up there to see that. Good luck, because that's a trek. And
yeah, have you looked at, oh my zoo. God, three-night minimum, $500 a night. It's like, might as well go to Europe if you're going to spend that money.
It's crazy. I was looking into it like right around that time, I was looking into it for Jeter and maybe getting a bus and looking at all these things. Everything was booked by that time. And I know people up there too, that it was very hard to get anything going, and to get it like a big group, just the traffic getting in there on those days, like with a bus, it's not a good situation. So
it seems like the classic situation that sounds great when you're talking about it, and then when you actually think about the logistics of it and actually doing it, you're like, oh, maybe I'll watch on TV.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely one of those things. And it's not like it's a big town. It's a small town. There's only, you know, one way in, I think, at least that was the way I saw. And then it's, you know, one main road. That's not a big road. It's a small little place. So it's going to be a zoo up there, but it's going to be a lot of fun watching that, hearing the stories. I'm sure a lot of people will be coming out as they have this week. I think one of the coolest things that we saw this week was Jeter went on the MLB Network and was talking about the flip play. So what do you like? It was cool just watching him break it down, some things that I was hoping he'd talk about, but they definitely practiced this thing. They practiced it and it happened.
Absolutely. And he kind of confirmed what everybody had been saying for 20 years. He is the third cutoff man on that play. So on a ball into the corner in right field, you got your second baseman, you got your first baseman, and then he's there between catcher and first base to possibly redirect the throw to third. And he kind of talked about how he would have had Terrence Long at third if they would have had to redirect. Obviously, he's going to go make the play at home and get that rumbling, stumbling Jeremy Giambi at the plate. But yeah, he's the third cutoff man there. He's there to direct the ball to third if need be, and they do practice it. And then you saw in the clip, he did it again in 2011 in Tampa. There was no flip play, but he practiced the same thing, Mr. Consistent.
Yeah, I mean, when you hit your cut, Jeter's not in that play. And like he was talking about, if you hit your cut, if Shade Spencer had hit his cut, Giambi would have been out by 10 feet. The fact that Jeter had the presence of mind of being there. And I love the play because it is a very heads up play. Obviously, yes, they practice it, but to be in that spot and then to do the backhand, and for him to say, it was the first time I heard that him talk about the runner at third, having Terrence Long at third. That was interesting to me, because when you look at his positioning, you could see that he could have, you know, planted that back foot and made a throw to third, but no, he had Giambi, and I love the jab at Giambi and the lack of speed in the family.
That was great. Classic Derek. And the play is almost poetic, like how quickly he gathers the ball and just flips it in one motion. It's something that I don't think he could ever recreate, and I don't think we'll ever see it again, really. It's just such a random occurrence, and that's why people call it a generational play. So always, always cool to relive that. That's probably one of my most looked up, you know, highlights on YouTube for sure. I probably watched that about 1,000 times in my life.
Yeah, and we did the Andrew and I last week released on Tuesday. We released the 1 through 5 moments that we had kind of ranked and did a special episode about the Jeter Hall of Fame announcement, and the flip was the one on there, because it was a crucial time. It was an unbelievable play. Like, the circumstances had to be exactly right, and Jeter had to be in that moment and had to be there in that exact spot. So it was just one of those very like Jeter-esque plays that encaptures everything about him.
And it was in an elimination game, of course, right? Yeah. They were down 0-2, 1-0 game. I mean, couldn't have happened at a better time. So, and I think that's one thing that kind of gets forgotten, is that they were facing elimination on the road when it happened. You know, it wasn't just like a game four where they were up 3-0 or up 2-1 or something like that. They were going home if they didn't win. So yeah,
it was a huge circumstance.
World Series.
Yeah, right. That would have tied the game. He had to be there. If he didn't make that play, who the hell knows what happens? Because now you have run scored, runner on third, you know, a lot of things could happen at that point. So
yeah,
huge play. And that's the beautiful thing about him. I was talking about the home run he hit against the Mets in 2002. The stone cold look on his face, man, when he hits that home run and just trots around the bases, and they had bumped him up to the leadoff spot in that point to kind of get something going. He walks up, hits that home run, and he's just like, you know what? This is what's happening. I'm put here to do my job. I'm not going to laugh. I'm not going to cheer. I'm not going to smile. He's just business, business, business. And he sets the tone. And I think that's one of the biggest things. He set the tone for those teams. And they all followed his lead. And obviously we saw some of the best baseball you could possibly watch. So
incredible. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
There are a couple mailbags that I wanted to get to. And guys, there are a lot of mailbags that came in. I'm going to save some of them for next week when Andrew is back. But there's two that were about Jeter that I want to talk about now that's obviously super fitting. This one's from Mike F. He says, with all the great Jeter press over the last week and going forward in this Hall of Fame tour, does the public image flip back to positive? The first few years of the Marlins were going to be the hardest anyway, and the Mattingly extension at least makes it look like they're buying into the future. So I don't even really know if it was a negative like public image, but I know there were some things that had come out about what was it, a scout or somebody that like, they fired?
He fired a guy that was sick or something and didn't retain. What was it, the guy's name? Jeff Conine, maybe, or some of these like longtime Mr. Marlins that he let go. But the guy wanted a clean house. I mean, it was a bad franchise. I don't really blame him for wanting to get rid of guys that weren't getting the job done.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think it's a flip because I don't think it was ever to a point that was a negative public image. Jeter has done such a good job in his entire career for controlling the narrative and controlling the story. I still think it's the case. I mean, you saw it. He retired and started a publication after never speaking to the media about anything, really. He starts a publication.
Right, he was taking mental notes during all those interviews. He just wasn't saying anything.
Yeah, he opens up a publication for athletes to talk to the fans and doing it themselves. So the guy has controlled the narrative every step of the way. And I think that's just kind of similar to what we're seeing here.
It is, and it's going to be all good articles and all good videos and people showing him love for the next 6 months. So I do think that that's a good question. Yeah, it's absolutely going to help. Not that the image was ever that bad. Maybe right around the Stanton trade, he took a little heat, but I think this summer and spring, it's going to be all love for Derek. So yeah, it should start to creep back up.
Especially when Stanton's hitting, on pace for 45 bombs this year, it's going to look like a great trade. Thank you, Derek.
Exactly.
The next one is from Jason Alexander. He says, yeah, I know. Not the same. Not George. This is George Costanza. This is all I'm reading this as. He says, this is an interesting mailbag I wanted to get to because I think it's obviously very fitting with Jeter getting announced. And we've alluded to other guys in the past too, who have these qualities. But this might be controversial opinion, but I personally believe the title captain should be retired with Jeter. I know Gehrig, Munson, and Mattingly were also captains, but it seems like being the captain was a huge part of Jeter's identity, even more so than those other guys. Even if a guy like Judge is deserving of it, I feel like it cheapens what it meant for Jeter. What are your thoughts? So you go ahead, take this one first. I'll tee it up for you. I got some thoughts about it.
Yeah, I definitely disagree. To say that there should never be another captain, I mean, you don't know who's going to come along in the next 20, 30, 50 years. The Yankees are going to be around for a while. I just think it's a little bit morbid almost to say we're never going to have a captain again. And I do think it's coming for Judge, whether it's this year, next year, the year after. I do think they're going to give him that title at some point. But even if not, even if there's a kid, even if they want to give it to Jason Dominguez in 10 years or whatever the case may be, I'd like to keep it. I still like having a captain moving forward. Derek will always be the captain, but I don't want to retire the captain from the Yankee organization.
Yeah, no, so I agree with you. I think that, I disagree that it's really just him. I think this is an era thing for sure. I think if you grew up in the Derek Jeter era, then obviously he's the guy that you saw as the captain. When I was growing up before Jeter was Jeter, Mattingly was the guy. He was the guy that had the C that was the heart and soul of those teams. So I think it's almost disrespectful to say that he would be the guy. And Jeter would never say that. But you look back at some of these guys, especially Munson too. I mean, Munson, people absolutely love Munson. The guys that grew up in that era, like, just absolutely love Munson. He's their guy. So it's almost a blasphemy, I think, to say that against some of these other guys. And I think people don't remember this. And I'm just making sure that I'm 100% correct on here. And I'm looking it up right now. But yeah. Guidry and Willie Randolph were named co-captains. Did you know that?
I knew Randolph was. I did not know that Guidry was.
Yeah, and I feel like it's never talked about. It's never acknowledged that they were, maybe because there was a co-captain situation, but...
That's hysterical. In the 70s, that must have been such a...
Yeah, it's just so interesting. Yeah, so Randolph spent 13 of 18 seasons as player with the Yankees and was co-captain of the Yankees with Ron Guidry from 86 to 88. So that never gets talked about. I feel like that one is a footnote in all these places and never gets talked about as being a captain. But you have these guys who are very important to their teams at that and during that era. That's why you can't, to me, you definitely can't do that.
And you could say that about any era. I'm sure there were guys in the 30s that, after Lou Gehrig passed, that said there should never be another captain too.
Sure.
I mean, everybody's going to feel that way about their guy. The Munson guys in the 70s, like you said, the Mattingly guys in the 80s, and now we're kind of the Derek guys. So, yeah, and you could say that about any era, and hopefully there will be another guy that comes along that is just as good and just as impactful as the guys that we just listed.
Yeah, and don't you want that? I feel like I want guys to strive to be that. And, like, not that you're thinking about it, but if you're doing the right things and you're winning as a team and you're the guy who's leading that team and like, you know, holds those same characteristics, that's a goddamn good thing. So I got no problem if someone is deserving enough to do it. Now, if we start talking about this in 5-6 years and the Yankees organization is throwing this out willy nilly and just being like captain and they're throwing it out a little too fast, that will bother me. But if a guy that is very deserving,
they don't do that though. I don't see them doing that.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't retire numbers either. They didn't put sections in the field for named after players either. They're doing different things now. There's a little bit of a difference in the way they're operating. So we'll see what happens. But I don't think it should be retired by any means.
Yep, I agree.
All right, so let's move on to some other stuff that's happening throughout baseball before we get to Ben Badler, and this is more of the stupid Astros thing, but we got to talk about it quickly. These guys are either not apologizing, apologizing in a really terrible way, or talking about the fact that they're going to apologize at some point after they all have, you know, an in-house PR meeting and construct all the apologies and make sure that they are exactly the way Jim Crane wants them and all these things. But it's gotten to a point where it's ridiculous. I'm over it. I'm so over it. I want them all to be penalized, but they're not going to be. They came out and said it again. No players are going to get penalized. But Jim Crane talking about that there's going to be apology at spring training. Thanks for projecting and telling us what it's going to be.
Hey, we're making a lineup and sing an apology together on stage. The whole thing's ridiculous. It almost seems like where is their PR department? You know, Altuve saying we're the underdogs. Bregman saying is just saying nobody else is saying anything. It's just total dysfunction. And obviously Verlander making that stupid crack Saturday night at the awards dinner. They don't seem to have any kind of unity or traction with this and any direction in which to go. And I'm just tired of looking at their smug faces. We've been talking about them for, 4 months?
It's irritating. It's very irritating. Verlander talked about that. CC was just getting pissed off, wanting nothing to do with it. I wouldn't be surprised if CC, tackled Verlander. I would not be surprised if CC, he probably had to leave the room just so he didn't do that. He's definitely a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. So, yeah. And then Keuchel talking about apologizing, but then being like, oh, well, I'm apologizing, but we didn't do it every day. Like, there's just, you get, these guys have no remorse for what they did. They don't care.
None.
They're still being cocky as all hell. So I think next year, it'll be interesting to see how it goes down. What do you see happening in between the lines? Because I'm wondering if we're going to see some rogue guys like Ryan Dempster throwing at A-Rod when that whole thing happened. Do you see some of these guys, getting sent messages during the season?
I do. I absolutely do, but not by the Yankees. I'm sure they've already even talked about it, or they will talk about it at spring training, whether it comes from Cashman or Boone. I think, our management is going to tell these guys, don't do it. Take it out on the field. We don't want to get into some scrap with them and bring more publicity to this. But do I think maybe Blake Snell or Tyler Glasnow or somebody like that was on Twitter chirping a little bit might throw it Altuve or Bregman? Absolutely. I think that those guys are going to catch some heat. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Bauer's not in the league anymore. He's in the National League. I don't know when Cincinnati or if they play Houston, but Mike Clevenger is still over there in Cleveland. I wouldn't be surprised if he dug one into their back. But yeah, I think there's going to be some messages sent early on. I don't know how it's going to be done, whether it's throwing just inside and just getting close. I can guarantee you this: if the ball is inside, I feel like because they are so arrogant and they are all about themselves, they will try to make it a big deal before they get hit. And
they're going to think every inside pitch. They're going to think every pitch that's on the inside corner is going after them. They're going to be ridiculous about it. And this us against the world mentality after getting caught cheating is just the most ridiculous, tired way to go about it. Just own up to it. You're not the underdog. You're not the underdog.
Not
you just
the
got
underdog.
Caught.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we're going to get to Ben Badler of Baseball America to talk about all the prospects, but congratulations again. I'm looking forward to hearing you now once a week on Wednesdays with JJ at George's Box. Glad you could come on the show for a few minutes here and wrap up this week while Andrew is still gone. So, I'll throw it to you. Where can people find you on social media? And, what else you got to say?
Yep, I'm on Twitter at NKirby, NYY, nice and symmetrical there. And yeah, just excited for the season. Going to be a big year for the Yanks and a big year for Bronx Pinstripes. So couldn't be more pumped.
All right, well, without further ado, here's Ben Badler. We talk from Baseball America, talking about the top 10 prospects. We get a lot into Jason Dominguez, And then some of the guys that were even outside the top 10, we talk about some of the risers that he thinks can fly up the system as well. So a lot of really good insight. He's in the thick of it with all the prospects. He's down in the Dominican watching these guys. So it's a really, really good mind to get into to talk about these guys. Enjoy the interview. All right, guys, we had him on last year talking about the different Yankee prospects and all of the top 10 list for Baseball America, Mr. Ben Badler. He covers MLB prospects, scouting, and player development for Baseball America. You could find him on Twitter at Ben Badler, and he posts a lot of videos and awesome content on Instagram as well at Ben.Badler. Ben, thanks for coming on again this year and talking about these young kids.
Oh, happy to, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I think that some of the name on the top of the list is the guy that we've all we don't really know much about. He's, you know, the Martian, as he's named. We've seen some videos and things like that from you know, from the Dominican, but we haven't really seen much of him on the field and what he's done. I think we're gonna, obviously now that he's going to be in the system, we're gonna see a lot more of Jason Dominguez. But he is the number one prospect on the list. It's exciting. So we'll kind of go through these top 10. You guys just released your top 100 for baseball. And you know, what we'd like to do here is just discuss the top 10 and how you guys came to that. But Dominguez being the number one guy on the Yankee system, and you had him where 38 for overall, right? So big jump for him.
Yeah, he's it's definitely an aggressive ranking for an international signing who's 16 years old and has never played. But definitely a lot of very positive scouting reports on him from scouts who have seen him. I went down to the Dominican Republic and got a chance to see him play myself. He had one at bat. The game was pouring rain and he hit it over the, like, they have a fence. You can probably see it on the video. They have the main outfield fence, and then they have like a giant chain link fence to cover up the trees so the balls don't go over that. And then he hit it over both of those fences. And then the game got pretty much rained out after that. So he definitely made the most of his opportunity there, his first unofficial home run in Dominican Instructs. So it's definitely an aggressive ranking for a first year international signing who has yet to play and is still 16 years old. But again, like the reports are all very positive on him, and I think the track record of the players who we've ranked as the number one international player in a given signing class going back the last several years is really, really strong, like surprisingly strong, actually. And I think it, because we're talking about kids who are signing at 16 years old, but I mean, in the last 6 years, we've got Eloy Jimenez, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Wander Franco, and Marco Luciano are four of those six. So three of those six are guys who went on to become top five overall prospects in the game. And two of them, you know, Franco is our number one prospect right now. Vladdy Jr. was our number one prospect a year ago. So two of those six went on to be the number one overall prospects in baseball. And then that fourth guy, Marco Luciano, we already have in our top 20, and he just signed in 2018. So he very well could be in that top five overall group, you know, at this time next year or at some point in the next couple of years. So, you know, there's two other guys in that group, Adrian Rondon and Kevin Maitán, who, you know, Rondon is basically a bust at this point, and I think Maitán is certainly heading in that direction. So there's always going to be a lot of risk when you're talking about these kids who are signing at 16 years old and have no professional experience. But I think it is, if you look at the recent history on these players, it's a stronger track record than, you know, as much as I love covering these first year international signings, I'm even surprised at how good how good of a track record these number one type guys have.
I mean, it seems like Dominguez was one of those guys though that was ranked so highly by every team that there was a, you know, the biggest signing. Obviously the Yankees fans knew about this guy before he even signed. I mean, it's at that level when you're a 16-year-old kid and everybody already knows who you are, and you know, hoping that the Yankees were going to get in there and swoop him and sign him. It seems like everybody is pretty much in consensus that this guy is going to be, he's a real deal. And just reading your report, reading, you know, about the different things that you guys have in the track record and the scouting report, you compared the body type to a young Moncada. But it seems like all the tools are there, and the fact that he's got some discipline, you know, on both sides of the plate. Can you talk about the big strengths that you've seen for him as a player and what you guys are already seeing as far as that freak athleticism?
Yeah, it's elite tools, certainly for his age and the body type. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find players who are built like him. I mean, he's not that tall. Like, he's shorter than Moncada. He's like, I don't know, he's maybe 5'10". He's not a tall guy.
Right.
But he's jacked.
Yeah, he's compact, man. He's very, very filled out.
If this guy was in, you know, high school, he'd be on the football field and you'd be handing him the ball and he'd be just running over guys and running by guys. Just a physical, quick twitch, explosive athlete. And that quick twitch explosion shows up in pretty much everything he does. It shows up in the bat speed, the hand speed, and then the strength and the power too, just because of how much bat speed and how much strength he has. It shows up in his first step explosion, you know, either running the bases or in the outfield. He's a well above average runner. He's got a strong arm too. It's an above average to well above average arm. So it's a lot of tools, but then yeah, I think you mentioned the plate discipline too. This is not just a raw tools guy. This is somebody who has instincts for playing the game. And I think when you look at somebody, you know, understandably, when you have somebody who has this much explosiveness and this caliber of tools at 16 years old, yeah, we're all going to want to talk about how good his tools are, and I think that's very understandable. But what I think probably should not get lost in this is just how much of a baseball rat he is. It's not like he's just a total raw, crude tools guy who doesn't quite know how to apply it into games yet. This is somebody who's growing up playing baseball his whole life, playing in games, and has a lot. You can see when he's on the field has just a pretty high baseball IQ as well. I mean, he grew up like much younger. He was, you know, he was a catcher. He always wanted to be involved on that side of the game. I mean, you know, when you have that kind of, he probably could catch, I think, if you wanted to move him back there. But when you have that, you know, the level of athleticism and speed and all the other tools that he has, I don't think, you know, you want to slow any of that down. So, this is a guy who has explosive tools, but is also a pretty advanced baseball player for a 16-year-old kid.
It's funny because in the report, it says that the Yankees described Dominguez as a player who might be constructed by taking the best tools from other players throughout their system and molding them into one player. So he's the video game make a player guy, is what we're talking about here. Like, this is the guy that you have a 10 for speed, a 10 for awareness, a 10 for discipline, arm strength, speed, range. Like, this is what the guy is. And he's so young that I think it's going to be a lot of fun for all of us now to watch, especially with the amount of coverage that's all over the place. And you know, what we can see now, I think, with the digital age. But it's going to be fun watching him climb through the ranks. Do you see this as a guy that could possibly, you know, kind of fly through it, no pun intended, but go more quickly? I mean, we all saw Gary Sanchez coming in at 16 years old. We heard his name, it seemed like, for 20 years before he came up. But obviously, being a catcher, there's more things that I think you have to develop. And it seems like Dominguez is a little bit more further aligned in the maturation process as far as a baseball player and all the tools.
I think he certainly has a chance to move relatively quickly, but yeah, I mean, I think Gary Sanchez is a good example of somebody who, you know, I'm pretty sure he got to the major leagues when he was like 23 or so, right? Like 22, 23, yeah. Which, you know, if you're drafted out of college, certainly a normal timetable to get to the big leagues, or even if you're drafted out of high school, it's not, you know, unusual to get to the major leagues when you're 22, 23 years old. But you know, Gary being, you know, a $3 million signing when he was 16 years old, I mean, you I think just some level of like prospect fatigue sets in where I think we ranked him on like, I think at least like six top 100s. And he was a top 10 prospect in the Yankee system for us from the time he, I believe from the time he signed. So from like, you know, at that point he would have been 17. So I think we had him in like six or seven different Yankees top 10s over the years. So I think even if he's somebody who it's like, quote unquote, only gets the big leagues in Dominguez's case when he's 23, like that's still a pretty normal timetable where, it's awesome that guys like Juan Soto are getting the big leagues at 19, or we see Vladdy Jr. at 20, or Cunha 21 years old, and these guys are just, Fernando Tatis Jr., and these guys are just killing it for the most part from the time they get there. Those guys are more the exceptions to the rule, and maybe Dominguez does that. I don't know, but I think it's as exciting of a talent as he is. I think there's also you'll probably also see some of that fatigue set in. I imagine when we're talking in like 2024 and people are like, why isn't this guy up? I've been hearing about him forever. It's like, well, he's still 20 years old, right? So I think that's just as talented as he is. I think that's important to remember in his case too.
Where do you expect him to start this year? Have they talked about where he's once the season starts going on, and are we going to see him at what rank do you think that he will start at?
I think somewhere in the United States. I don't expect him to spend any time in the Dominican Summer League. Now, the Yankees have two Gulf Coast League affiliates. They have a team in the Appy League. And I guess they do have a team also in the New York Penn League. That would be super aggressive for a kid who's going to be 17 years old in his first season. I guess I wouldn't totally rule that out, but he's going to come over, I'm sure, for extended spring training. Mm-hmm. I would think the most aggressive they would probably be would be the Appy League. I believe they did that with like Everson Pereira his first year out after he basically annihilated extended spring training. So I don't think it really matters a ton. Like wherever he's at this year, I think he's got a chance to be 18 years old and go to the South Atlantic League that season, wherever he is. But definitely expect him to jump straight to the States with the exact team still to be determined after extended spring.
Awesome. So there's a few guys that when I saw these, I was surprised. Actually, the next one, I was definitely surprised. And let me just list these off so everybody hears it. If you haven't checked it out, go to Baseball America and check out the top 10 rankings that they have for all the teams and for the Yankees. So I'm just going to list them quickly. Is Dominguez. Then we got Clark Schmidt, which was a surprise to me. Devy Garcia as 3. Luis Gil. Oswald Peraza, who's a shortstop, number 5. Anthony Volpe, who is the shortstop that was drafted last year out of Del Barton. Luis Mendina, who's right-handed pitcher. Contreras is a right-handed pitcher. Alexander Vizcaino, right-handed pitcher. And then Albert Abreu, right-handed pitcher. He came over in the McCann deal, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of right-handed pitching coming up. That's strong. That's a good thing. But can you talk to me about Clark Schmidt and Devy Garcia and why Clark Schmidt jumped up to that number 2 spot? I was surprised. I was expecting to see Garcia there.
Yeah, so for me personally, I actually prefer Garcia to Schmidt, but I think when we came together and finalized the list, I think just the reports on Schmidt were pretty strong from pro scouts with other organizations. I mean, this was a guy who basically or barely had pitched in pro ball coming into the year at Tommy John surgery, so he didn't pitch in 2017, barely pitched in 2018, but this was a guy who was pretty highly regarded coming out of the draft, and he came back and the stuff is there. I mean, the reports we have on his stuff, I mean, fastball up to 97 with a lot of life, good action on his changeup, the breaking ball, anywhere from 50 to 60 grades on that pitch and a pretty solid strike thrower who had a lot of success in the Florida State League and started to, you know, to keep that going in the brief time, at least, that he got to Double A. So a lot of promising reports on him. His stock certainly, I think, shot up quite a bit this year.
Yeah,
or this last year, I should say.
It's almost like everybody had to see what he was going to, what the physical, you know, how much he could throw, like what he'd look like after that surgery. Because, you know, the Yankees drafted him out of South Carolina knowing that Tommy John surgery was coming up. So I guess all you guys that are ranking and scouts wanted to just see what that looked like after Tommy John and to see if, you know, the strength was still there, obviously. And I think the strike throwing is to me one of the more exciting. You see so many of these guys that have all the tools, but struggle to throw the ball over the plate consistently. I think that's one of the biggest, you know, one of the biggest reasons why these guys struggle or never make it to the bigs. But he's able to show that now. That's encouraging. He's definitely got the arm strength there.
Yeah, it's, you know, when these guys come back from Tommy John, I think, and sometimes we think of it, oh, like Tommy John, it's, you know, like, you know, twisting an ankle or something, you'll be fine. Like, right. But it's, you know, it's a pretty major operation, and we've seen guys come back and their stuff just isn't there. I mean, sometimes I think we take it for granted, and the success rate of it is still pretty high, but it's definitely not a guarantee. So to actually see him come back and the stuff being where it's at right now, I mean, you know, there's still some, you know, long-term durability risk. Want to see him throw more than 100 innings in a season, but, you know, what he did in 2019, I don't think you could ask for too much more.
And then the third guy, Davey Garcia, who I already kind of mentioned, he's the third Yankees prospect that you guys have on your top 10. Dominguez coming in at 30. I'm sorry, your top 100. Dominguez coming in at 38, Schmidt at 62, and then Garcia at 65. Obviously, you guys were all pretty close with Garcia and Schmidt as 2 and 3, being that there are 62 and 65 on your top 100 as well. But Davey Garcia is obviously a guy that we've all heard about. I was expecting him to make a late season bullpen appearance at some point. It never happened. He was in Scranton, but the kid really did seem like he showed good progress as he kept going up. And I know he had some rocky starts in Scranton, but it seemed like he came back from those and pitched really well. And then they put him in the bullpen, I guess, to manage those innings at the end. But what are your thoughts on Garcia? And do you expect him to be coming up with the Yankees at some point as a starting pitcher, or do you see him more long-term in the bullpen?
Yeah, I love Davey Garcia. He's one of my favorite pitching prospects in the minor leagues. I see a guy who's got a fastball that misses bats. It's got, you know, plus velocity. You've seen him up to 96, even 97, good life on it. Gets swing and miss when he pitches up in the zone, and then that breaking ball is such a weapon for him. It's just such tight spin, rotation on it, just dives underneath the bats of hitters. He's, you know, curveball. He's got a slider too. It's you know, just that innate feel for spinning the baseball. I personally think is something you can't really teach. For the most part, and he has it, and that's why you see so many strikeouts from him. I think that there's some concern among some scouts just about his size, but I just, you know, it's not something I really share for, you know, for a pitcher who's in, you know, AAA, who's, you know, I think like, what, 20, 21 years old now. You know, if we're talking about a 16-year-old kid who's, you know, smaller, like all else being equal, yeah, I'd probably rather have the, you know, the bigger guy who maybe has more physical projection left, but there's not really anything you have to project here on his stuff. He's, you know, this is a guy who's got really good, you know, fastball, really good breaking stuff, misses a ton of bats. I don't see his size as any kind of a significant concern for me. So I see a guy who should be a starter for them that, you know, I think it should be probably at some point in the first half of the season. I think he'll be up. I'd probably be guessing as to when exactly that would be. But I think this is a guy who's just on the cusp of being big league ready and has a chance to be a mid rotation starter with a chance for even more.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. And I think it was the Futures game, right, that he started that we saw last year. And he was – you could just look at the makeup of him, and it just seemed like he was a gamer just from just visibly watching it, just looking at the, you know, the body language. It seems like there wasn't a stage that's really too big for him. Just some of the things I listened to the interview that you had on the back end too. It just seems like a very mature kid who is ready for the, you know, the big lights, and it doesn't really faze him. That's kind of the vibe I got from just hearing him talk and watching him pitch. But yeah, the size, apparently the size is a lot of people knock that for endurance for wear reasons over the years. And that's why that maybe the innings aren't going to be there. But in today's age, like nobody throws 200 innings anyway. So, you know, are we looking at him breaking down for what reason? Just because he's a smaller guy? I don't really believe in that either.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that it's more about the, you know, your strength level and your delivery and just whatever is internally inside of your body, things that we can't really see anyway.
Right.
And this guy, for the most part, throughout his career, has had a pretty clean bill of health too. All the components are there from what I can see for him to be a starting pitcher.
Do you think that because the Yankees have an interesting situation with their pitching staff, obviously not projecting injuries because you can't do that, but they always happen. That being said, number five starter Cashman was recently talking about Jay Happ. You know, that's kind of the projected guy. But Jordan Montgomery is also coming back, came back at the end of last year and will be most likely starting, I would think, in Scranton with Davey Garcia, so that, you know, there could be kind of a logjam there with pitching unless there are injuries, of course. But do you think the Yankees could see him as a very active participant and a guy that could impact the team in immediately and then trying to, you know, bring him into the bullpen at some point and then turn it back again? And, we've seen this with Jabba Chamberlain. That's why I get a little nervous about it and what the Yankees have done by going back and forth and back and forth. But it seems like the way that the roster is, you know, checking out, all things considered, that there could be that opportunity for Davey Garcia to kind of float back and forth.
Yeah, it's possible. I'd probably be more guessing as to, you know, how they, you know, whether they would plan to use him that way. I mean, I guess the more optimistic the example of that more than Jabba Chamberlain would be like a Chris Sale, who obviously was a reliever early on in his career and transitioned to be a successful starter. Not saying Davey Garcia is going to be Chris Sale. I think he has, they have the option of doing that. For me, I would like to just see him just be a pure starter. I think he has more value that way. And you know, by the end of the season, there's nobody that's only using five starting pitchers during the regular season. Somebody's going to get hurt, go on the disabled list, or just pitch like crap. It's just going to be the way it works out. So I think at some point, again, I don't know exactly when, but I think at some point during the first half of the season, you're going to see him coming up and pitching innings in the rotation for the Yankees.
So a few more of these guys. The rest of the list is essentially right-handed pitching and two shortstops. Can you talk to about the two shortstop? Obviously, Oswald Peraza, if I'm saying that correctly, is the number five, and then you got Anthony Volpe, who was the draft pick last year from Dumbarton High School and started with Pulaski. What are you seeing with those two guys? Obviously, the one kid, Volpe being the Yankees' number one draft pick. You know, they obviously have a lot of potential there, and I'm sure they have high hopes for him. But what are you seeing from those two guys?
I think Peraza, it's definitely an aggressive ranking with him. You just talk to scouts from other organizations, it's pretty clear this guy has a, you know, I don't know whether he stays in the long organization long term or if he gets traded, but it's pretty clear just talking to other clubs, this guy would have a pretty good amount of trade value because scouts from other clubs seem to be pretty interested in him. He's a pretty good athlete, a pretty polished player. You know, it doesn't kind of jump out at you maybe in the numbers. It's not like he doesn't have much power. He's not gonna be somebody who goes up there and impacts the ball for much extra base juice. But you know, it's a pretty simple swing. He doesn't strike out much. And then defensively, really good reviews on him, as a defender, as an athlete, as a runner too. So, somebody who I think over the next few years, I think just getting stronger is going to be important for him. And I think that will probably, dictate a good amount of his future if he does and he's able to drive the ball with more damage. I think that helps him develop into a guy who has a chance to be an everyday guy. If not, I think that certainly puts more of a dent into his profile. And then Volpe, not a great debut. I think there's some risk there with him, given kind of some of the swing and miss tendencies. But if you like him, he's somebody where it's an instinctive player who stands out more for kind of the baseball IQ and instincts more so than the raw tools, but somebody who has a chance to stay at shortstop and be a solid player, but somebody where I think that jump to low A this year is going to be a big one for him.
The rest of the guys with being right-handed pitching is something that the Yankees have definitely done well is develop velocity. It seems like they've done well in a lot of the international signings and then bringing guys up to develop that velocity. So talking about these right-handed guys, it seems like a lot of them are touching high 90s. Which one or two of these guys do you stand out to you? Do you see having a quicker impact? And kind of B to that question is,
The Yankees have this like factory of arms, especially and all these guys are pretty much out of Dominican Republic and Venezuela. I mean, they do a really good job of just finding these guys for not necessarily big signing bonuses, but who have attributes that you can project on, and then they actually go and develop these guys. And I think them and the Astros have done a good job too, just finding these guys where we're like, who is this guy? Oh, he suddenly is throwing 98, 99, or triple digits in some cases. And yeah, I mean, like Luis Gil is an example of that. They signed him out of the Dominican Republic. It seems like a while ago now.
Yeah, he's been coming up a lot.
Yeah, so he was originally a twin sign, so they mm-hmm. they traded for him. But just a guy who's popped triple digits fastball at his best, guy who misses a lot of bats. That Charleston team this year had a whole slew of guys where it's like you talk to different scouts about whether it was him or Luis Medina or Rolandy Contreras or Alexander Vizcaino, and you could have scouts who line them up in all different kind of orders. So it's kind of like pick your flavor. I mean, I think the most interesting guy to me is Luis Medina. I don't necessarily like him the most, but he's the most fascinating guy to me because just on raw stuff, it's a guy who's throwing triple digits. We've had him up to 101. He's basically sitting in the upper 90s as a starter. The look at the raw pitch quality, not just the fastball, but it's power curveball too. The changeup is good. And then if you saw him like 2018, he's also walking more than a batter per inning. So like he's just all over the place. And then this year, or I should say in 2019, in the second half or at least like the last, toward the last month or so of the season, it seems like he started throwing more strikes, and you want to hope that's like a sign of real progress and not just statistical noise, and it's just going to, you know, revert to his wild tendencies that he's shown, you know, really throughout the rest of his career. So I'm optimistic that that change is real, but at the same time, still skeptical that it is, just given his entire history leading up to this point. It's still pretty scary. But this guy, I mean, just on pure stuff, has, I mean, you know, I'd put him above even, you know, Davey Garcia, Clark Schmidt. I'd put him over anybody in the system just on raw stuff. But the, you know, the pitchability, the feel for throwing strikes, really until that very, very end of the season, just has not been there, which is why he's number seven on this list as opposed to above some of those other guys. But the upside there is really exciting. It's just a question of whether he's ever going to be able to corral it all.
Yeah, the consistency, strike throwing, again, like that's, you see that stuff, and I think it's probably, you know, even seeing it with some of the guys that have come up. Chance Adams was, you know, a guy that rose through the ranks pretty quick, but just couldn't control the zone well enough. I think that was to his detriment being on the team, but saw some action, and you just seen some of these guys fall off because of that. So I saw that he improved towards the end of the year, so I'm really definitely hoping that that wasn't just a fluky thing, and that, like you said, it'll kind of fall back into the averages of all the metrics and such, but that it was a jump off point for him. So a couple more guys that didn't actually make your list, which again, surprised me not seeing them. And, you know, you're looking at the different people talking about Floreal as one of them. I think he was your number one last year, if I remember, if I'm correct on that. And then Anthony Siegler, who was a 2018 draft pick, catcher coming up. But talk about those two guys and why you didn't see them cracking the top 10.
Yeah, Floreal, I mean, it's, you know, I don't think there's any question about his raw tools. It's just he's got to start to translate it more into the game. You know, he struggled this last year in Tampa. I think there's you know, some lengths of the swing, and I think there's just a lot of pitch recognition issues too. So you see a really high strikeout rate that gets into red flag territory. I mean, he still has plenty of power, probably more power, more raw power than what shows up in the game, because again, it's you know, just issues with the pitch recognition and plate discipline and swing decisions, swing at pitches that he can do damage with. You know, I think some of the injuries he's had have slowed him down, but I think that the issues that he's had with recognizing breaking balls and controlling the strike zone are bigger issues that are just only going to, I think, get magnified as he moves up higher in the organization, and kind of have already given him pretty significant problems even to this point. And yeah, Siegler, another guy where you know, coming into the draft was a pretty interesting guy in 2018, kind of a tough year for him too, just being so limited with I think it was hamstring injuries and a concussion too. So we haven't had a ton of time just to actually see him on the field. The reports that we've had on him have been just okay, but don't want to judge him too harshly just based on the fact that he really hasn't played too much since then, but not a guy who at this point would fit into the Yankees top 10 right now.
Yeah, it seems like there's still some good talent outside the top 10 that just kind of needs to show itself a little bit more. I mean, even with Floreal with those injuries, you're talking about Siegler with some of those injuries, if they can rebound from that and show it. And I remember you talking last year about Floreal, about that long swing and some of that plate discipline. So, you know, it's been, I think it's unfortunate with the injuries that he's had too. He got hit by a ball, I think, right? And then I was actually there at the game when he injured his wrist against the wall in spring training. It's just unfortunate how, you know, his progression has also been stunted by unfortunate fluky injuries too. But I guess that wears on you. You have to be on the field to be able to improve. And unfortunately, he's just not able to stay on the field either.
Yeah. I mean, that just makes it tough to evaluate a guy when they're not on the field, or when they do come back, you're like, well, is an injury still bothering him? Especially if we're talking about, a concussion, something like that. It's, I think we've learned a lot more about how serious those, that can be and the lingering effects. So, again, the reports were just okay on him in 2019, but kind of want to, we still have him in the Yankees top 30 prospects, but, I think there's some other guys that kind of, jumped ahead of him right now.
So, you're talking about the top 30, obviously you guys released the top 100 in baseball, the top 10 for each teams. Who's a guy that's, maybe outside the top 10 that we haven't spoken about that catches your eye, a guy or two, that catch your eye that could be some, possibly next year in the rankings in the top 10, or guys that are just going to, maybe rise a little bit faster than others?
I'm pretty intrigued by some of the lower level guys the Yankees had at the rookie level this year. They had a few guys in the Gulf Coast League and Antonio Gomez and shortstop Alexander Vargas, was a really good defensive shortstop, and Kevin Alcantara, a center fielder who played the year. He only turned 17 during the season, and he's 6'6" and just glides around the outfield. He's just a really just physically unusual player, like a Dexter Fowler size guy out in center field, but still really raw. But again, he just turned, he'd be a high school junior, I think, this year, maybe, if he was in the States, or maybe a young senior. He's just really young, but really high physical upside. But I think Antonio Gomez might be the most interesting guy to me, a catcher who, I think people sometimes are prone to hyperbole and exaggeration talking about prospects sometimes. And you look at these lists of, showcases in the States, and somehow everybody throws these 1.8 pop times, and it's come on, that's not, not real. But Gomez legitimately has, thrown in game pop times into the low 1.8s, not saying he's there every time, but just on raw arm strength, I would conservatively go with a 70 arm on him on the 20-80 scale. And maybe that's just because I'm too much of a chicken to put an 80 arm on a guy who's 17 years old, because it just sounds almost too good to be true. But this guy has just an absolute cannon arm, but then you combine it with a really quick exchange, quick footwork. It's all the, just on pure throwing ability, it's just phenomenal to watch. He didn't get to play a ton this year, just for health issues that he had, but it's unfortunate, because I think if he had played more, I think a lot more people would be talking about this guy. Just a really exciting defensive catcher where the bat keeps improving too. I haven't even talked about his bag, just because his arm is that is that special. It's up there with Gary Sanchez's arm. It's pretty remarkable. But as a hitter too, he stays through the middle of the field. He's got some physicality to him. I don't think he's going to be a middle of the order masher, but I think he's going to hit enough to be, or has a chance to hit enough to be, an everyday guy to go with a pretty special arm and just a really smart player too, bilingual speaker, which is huge for a young Venezuelan catcher who's going to be working you know, both Spanish and English speaking pitchers right away. So I think that, you know, just helps, just gives him another thing to help him on the defensive side too. So he's somebody who I'm pretty excited to see, hopefully a full or hopefully a healthy season from him this year, because I think he's got a chance to really catch some more attention in 2020.
And then last thing, I'm looking through some of the midseason stuff from last year as well, and I remember preseason even, I think these guys were on there. Maybe they were just guys of note that you had mentioned, but outfielders, Pereira and Cabello, mm-hmm. are two guys that were in your top 10 in midseason, but not this year. So are you seeing I'm interested to know like how the outfielders are projecting besides Dominguez, obviously, because we don't really know much about him in games yet. It's all theoretical at this point, I think, you know, just by looking at him. But some of these guys that have played, are you seeing, you know, some regression from where they were as prospects, or are they just being bumped out from other guys who have, you know, maybe higher ceilings?
Yeah, I think in, you know, in Pereira's case, he struggled this year, but also like he didn't play a ton. Yeah, he got like sprained an ankle. I think he ran into a wall or was trying to make a catch and got injured. Didn't play a ton, and when he did, I think kind of the plate discipline got him in trouble. But again, he was like an 18-year-old playing in basically a college league in the New York Penn League up in Staten Island. So tough to judge. I mean, I really liked him a lot when he signed, but just going to have to wait for him to be healthy and kind of wait and see on him. Antonio Cabello is a guy who's he's always had like pretty strong tools and like a really unusual package. I mean, he's maybe like 5'10 ish, 5'11, but like he's just built like, I don't know what he's built like a catcher. He's like 210, 215.
Okay.
But like, you know, at least as an amateur, he was also a plus runner, but he was also catching as an amateur. So just a really unusual profile. Hit really well in 2018, his first year in the Gulf Coast League, like really, really well. But then this year, jumped him up to Pulaski, and I think the plate discipline got him in trouble. He looked like he was a little bit heavier and a little bit more sluggish. I don't know how much of that is, you know, a guy who looks like that. I think if he's, if he's hitting well, he looks, you know, you just say he looks strong and compact. Right. And if he's struggling, oh, he's, you know, maybe out of shape. Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. But like, so I don't know how much that plays into it, but, you know, there's definitely still, some pretty interesting tools there, but, there's always been some stiffness to his game too. And, he's always just been even going back to like when he was an amateur player in Venezuela, he was just a divisive split camp kind of guy. And I think this past season where he struggled didn't help him there. So, you know, look, all these guys we talked about, you know, Cabello, Pereira, all the other guys, Siegler and then these guys are all still in the Yankees top 30. They're like interesting guys. And I think, you know, if we take like six or seven of them, by the time they get to, you know, to low A or maybe even high A, a lot of them are just going to kind of hit a wall by that point. But I think a couple of them will probably break through because there's a lot of raw talent there, but there's just a lot of red flags to these guys in terms of the risk factors. So I think that just is what the Yankees do pretty much every year. I mean, they bring in a lot of really interesting players, especially out of, you know, a lot of these guys we're talking about are signed out of Latin America. And then a lot of the times, you know, just not specific to the Yankees, but just with every organization, you get to low A and, you know, that's, you know, some guys can kind of hit a wall there and other guys, you know, especially like they shown on the pitching side, can really, really take off from there.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. I know that there's a lot of raw talent, and I think a lot of these international signings that the fans don't really know too much about are going to be guys that will surprise some people, and we'll start to get some of these names. So, Ben, I appreciate your insight as always. It's always good to get hear it from a guy who's able to see these guys live and in person as well. So appreciate all the insight. And again, if you could tell everybody where they could find you one more time, and anything that you guys have coming up at Baseball America.
Yeah, absolutely. Twitter, Instagram, just punch in my name. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Ben Badler out there, so it should be pretty easy to find. Or baseballamerica.com is where all the work that we do for the draft, for international signings, for minor league prospects, all our prospect rankings, all our scouting reports at baseballamerica.com for $6.25 a month. Get access to all our coverage year round, and our prospect handbook should be hopefully coming out. I know a lot of people have already ordered that, so hopefully that should be delivered I hope within the next few weeks or so. The Baseball America prospect handbook is the 900 scouting reports, top 30 players for each organization, and a whole bunch of other information even just beyond the top 30 guys for each club as well.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely nerd out on that thing because I love reading about these young guys and all the upside for them. It makes me happy and look forward to the future. So, Ben, thanks again, man, for coming on. And we'll definitely get you back on the show and talk about these kids a little bit more down the road.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.